to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead, here again to have another conversation with you about some of the stories that matter. Folks, we are delighted, as always, to be here with you. As you know, on Tuesdays, we do what we call American History 101, where we take a moment and go through a news story to try to give some background information about it, to talk about why it is happening, to talk about why it is important. And today, what we're getting into is what is happening with Governor Cuomo. I want to spend some time talking about sexual assault and sexual harassment. I want to talk about why this issue with Governor Cuomo is so important and what we need to do about it. What does it call upon us to do? Yesterday, we got into an early conversation about Governor Cuomo, and I was talking about how I think it's interesting and odd that people are willing to forgive Governor Cuomo and saying things like, well, you have to understand that, you know, Governor Cuomo is Italian and this is what they do, really making excuses for his behavior. I think that that is part of the problem, that Governor Cuomo has found that people aren't willing to excuse his behavior. He did a public announcement today, and I listened to it. I'm sure we're going to have some clips from it. They'll pull them up in just a second. But Governor Cuomo, in going through and talking about the fact that he is resigning, it sounded to me like he was doing some type of diversity training, because he was talking about all the things that he's done and everything he was trying to get right and how upset he is that he wasn't able to accomplish the main thing he wanted to accomplish, which is diversity. I don't understand how diversity was his main issue, when his main issue should have been dealing with the fact that there are no less than 11 women, probably a lot more, who are concerned about the fact that Governor Hogan could not, did not, chose not to understand that there are boundaries in the workplace. You do not have the right to touch, to kiss, to hold, to grope women just because that is how you are accustomed to responding to people. So in our American History 101 segment, I want to delve deep into sexual assault and sexual harassment. We're going to be joined by a couple of folks who are going to break this down with us. So Governor Hogan announced that he is resigning. It is effective in 14 days. I'm not sure why it's not effective immediately. New York Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul will replace Cuomo and become the state's first female governor. A state investigation released last week found that Cuomo sexually harassed multiple women and violated state law. Allegations he denies. Cuomo was facing an impeachment investigation from New York Assembly's Judiciary Committee. Cuomo called the impeachment investigation into him politically motivated, but that he was stepping down because he would never want to be unhelpful in any way. I am quoting him now. I'm a New Yorker born and bred. I'm a fighter. And my instinct is to fight through this controversy because I truly believe it is politically motivated. I believe it is unfair and it is untruthful, and I believe it demonizes behavior that is unsustainable for society. You know what else is unsustainable for society? Sexual assault and sexual harassment. You know what else is unsustainable for society? Using your bully pulpit to call attention to all the things you've done and how wonderful you are, rather than using that as an opportunity to apologize over and over again, if necessary, to any of the women who have accused you of this behavior. The New York State's Attorney General says, look, I looked at about 74,000 1,000 pieces of information, documents, emails, photographs, and I believe the women. I think that Governor Cuomo, who went on to say, quote, New York tough means New York loving. And I love New York and I love you and I would never want to be unhelpful in any way. Look, dude, the sister said that she believes the women. If the attorney general is saying that, then I'm going to stand with the sister and say, you know what? You do not have to tell us that you love us. You do not have to tell us that you regret not doing no more diversity work. You don't have to tell us anything. All we needed to hear from you was, I resign. We don't need some tiptoe through your life with multiple photographs and video presentations, some spectacular Emmy award-winning presentation, rather than saying, you know what? I resign. How about I was wrong? How about I need to step aside? How about I'm done, finite? I'm dropping the mic. I'm out of here. Rather than this big pull towards how great you were and how upset you are that you weren't able to do more. You've done enough. I, like the attorney general, believe the women. 74,000 pieces of information can't be wrong. But let me just step back. Open up the phone lines, 410-319-8888. Let me go to Attorney Ivan Bates from Bates and Garcia Attorneys at Law, and let's hear kind of the legal perspective, because where I sit, look, dude, you're guilty. Just step down, resign, step away. Ivan, how are you?
Hey, I'm fine. How are you doing today, Dr. K?
I'm doing well. Everything is well. I am so happy that you were able to come and join us. To give us the legal perspective of Governor Cuomo's farewell swan song that he presented today. So can you talk us through, first before we get into, you know, just kind of hearing what you think about it, first talk us through the legal implications of this and why, instead of, you know, holding himself out to have this big impeachment investigation being conducted, he chose to step aside.
Look, a couple of things. First of all, there are a number of lawsuits pending against him. So if they have an impeachment hearing, the state assembly up in New York may decide to call witnesses, present evidence. He may have to respond. Anything he says can potentially be held against him in some of the other lawsuits that are against him. So they may be able to go after him in a way that is just something that he never really anticipated, that can technically maybe show, we're not going to just look at you from being governor, but we want to personally hold you responsible. And so that's one of the legal issues that he had to consider. Also, from the political perspective, you have an attorney general who's very, very well-liked, who's done a very in-depth, thorough report. You have at least right now 11 victims. I understand there are another two others that appear that may have gone to the attorney general's office yesterday. And you also have a person who is on your team who's now, I believe, filed criminal charges. So that's another issue. And now you've had your chief of staff, your right hand, now they've resigned. His whole world was crashing in. So from his standpoint, he wanted to say, hey, you know, he was trying to work a deal that said, if you don't do an impeachment hearing, I promise I won't run again. But in New York, they said no. So he really was in a corner. He didn't want to necessarily resign. And I think his statement clearly shows that he did not necessarily, I think, totally understand the depth of the allegations, the depth of his actions, and how they had impacted on so many other individuals.
Now, let me say this, Ivan, before we go on. I need to issue an apology. I mistakenly said Governor Hogan's name. Governor Hogan, just so people can relax, Governor Hogan is not resigning. Governor Hogan is not under investigation. We're talking about Governor Cuomo of New York. So I definitely want to make that clarification, because that is not what we're saying at all. So Governor Cuomo, who at this point is coming under fire, even with the resignation, Ivan, do you think that the other investigation is going to continue? Not the investigation for impeachment, but all the other investigations into whether or not he's criminally liable or responsible for what happened.
Yeah, I think they will continue. Without a doubt, I think they're going to continue because you still have individuals out there who are victims. Mm. So their cases and the, you know, what happened to them, you know, and what they're saying, you know, is happened, they're still going to investigate that. I think what you've seen is the Attorney General has given her report, and now it's, I think it's up to other organizations, other groups to decide how they wish to proceed. For instance, the criminal matter, will it be prosecuted, will it not be prosecuted? Some of these civil cases, are they going to file civil lawsuits? But you also have to look, you know, will he be personally liable? What makes him personally liable as a governor? Is the state of New York going to have to pick up any tabs? Are they not? Is, you know, so many questions are out there. But, yes, I still think they will personally continue. One of the things to me that makes this to me, when you look at it, I always try to find something negative and a positive because here what we're saying is that we're going to hold public officials responsible to make sure they're ethically, you know, going to follow the correct canons and rules of ethics that, you know, you must follow, but that we society says you have to follow. You know, his resignation speech talked about, I guess, almost a change in time. But that doesn't mean that it was correct what you were doing in the past. You know, you have daughters. I have a daughter, as we know. So as a man, as a father, I think one of the questions sometimes you have to ask yourself with these is that, you know, you're saying that this is basically because this is the way it was done that made it okay. But to these victims, no, it didn't make it okay. Mm. And so I think, you know, looking at his resignation, in many ways, it may just be fuel to the fire for some of the people that may have said, okay, let's let it go. They're going to say, no, he still hasn't accepted responsibility.
Now, how difficult is it to be able to hold high-ranking officials accountable for this? Now, when I say this, coming through the lens of Bill Cosby, and I know that there was a technicality with that, and so you can explain for people again why Bill Cosby is out now. We know that R. Kelly, they're choosing the jury in that case. These are high-profile individuals, while people like, for example, Larry Nassar and Sandusky and Weinstein are all in prison. Because of hashtag Me Too, is it easier to hold them accountable, or is it still just as challenging as it's always been?
Well, I think in many ways it's still going to be very challenging as it's always been. A lot of times it's just still the he said, she said, what makes it sometimes very difficult. You know, those are also criminal matters, but none of these are all criminal. One of the things that's happening, there are at least two New York State District Attorney's Office currently investigating criminal actions by Governor Cuomo. So you still have to figure out what's going on with that before any charges will happen. Remember, when we saw the documentary about R. Kelly, he was free. But based on that information, and they used that information from the documentary to have a deeper investigation. Some of these investigations are already continuing. Then later on, they had the criminal charges. Once they had the criminal charges on the federal side, that's when they then decided to go ahead and incarcerate R. Kelly. You know, when you're looking at Larry Nassar, was when you had so many individuals saying and they're being victimized, they had been victimized for so many years, and then you had the DA office sitting down and really looking at them and putting together a tight case and then filing the charges. That's when you had Larry Nassar being able to be held responsible within the criminal justice system. So I think when you look at those situations, that's when you kind of understand that the Me Too movement has definitely been a very positive movement, because what it's done, it's allowed them to take issues that people would have wanted to sweep under the carpet because they were powerful, but said, no, you're going to investigate this in front of everybody so that everybody can finally get to the truth.
So does it make it easier, given that they're, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere between 74 and someone else said 79,000 pieces of evidence in this particular situation?
Well, when you look at evidence, sometimes it could be exculpatory, showing that you didn't do anything. Sometimes it could show that you did something. I don't know what all the evidence is, so I can't make I don't want to assume one way or another. But then I'm sure the evidence may show a text message here, a phone call here.
Okay.
It may show a receipt of maybe where they're trying to say, well, you know, I was with, you know, Governor Cuomo, for instance. We went to dinner, and here, you know, here's a picture of us at dinner together that particular night when this incident happened. That could be a piece of evidence. So we don't know how the piece of evidence fit into the puzzle. And so, you know, also you don't know what crimes he may or may not have committed. You know, for instance, you know, in Maryland, if he would have touched, if it's alleged that he touched one of the female associates with him, it could be a potential fourth-degree sex offense, just the mere touching.
Wow,
and
okay.
So, or it could be a second-degree assault, the mere touching. It's so many different ways, so many different variables. The law on the criminal side looks at it from so many different angles. For instance, a fourth-degree sex offense is a misdemeanor. A second-degree assault is a misdemeanor. So that's not necessarily the count that would necessarily hold him in jail.
Right.
But then if you get a sexual offense where he maybe touched her and her in her private region, then you could have a sexual offense that could necessarily have more jail time, potential felonies. So it's so much out there, so many different ways to speculate. You have to allow the prosecutors to do their in-depth, thorough investigations, and from there, they'll be able to figure out what, if any, charges he could potentially face. And that really may be the biggest reason why he decided to step down.
I wonder, too, Ivan, I know this is not a legal reason, but I wonder, too, how much influence was involved in Cuomo's decision when President Biden said he should step down, and then Nancy Pelosi said he should step down, that there was pressure coming within the party that may have played into his decision as well, not getting that support from the higher-ups.
No, I agree. I think when he looked around and realized it was very lonely on the island he was on, I think that did play a role. You know, one of the things that also I think played a role is when you have, you know, the DA in Nassau County saying they're going to continue their investigation and the DA in Albany saying they're going to continue their investigation. I think that played a major, major role because it's one thing to no longer have the job. It's another thing to be in jail and in prison.
14 days.
I mean, look
why
at Harvey
not immediately? Wallace. I'm just wondering, like, why did he leave immediately? Or do you need at least 14 days, I guess, to wrap things up?
You know what? I think that's part of the ego talking.
Okay.
You know, I think, you know, but I never know because, you know, I'm not in that position. There could be one or two things he wants to make sure he takes care of. I don't know.
Right.
You know, what I will say that we need to be very, you know, looking from a positive point of view is the new governor. She'll be in there.
Right.
And, you know, here, she'll be the first female, if I'm not mistaken,
yes,
governor in the history of New York. And she has some really great, her platform, talking about raising minimum wage.
This is excellent.
Dealing with heroin and the opioid epidemic. You know, those are very important hot topics. So I think that's a person within the Democratic Party who will be looked at as saying, you know what, this was a bad chapter. And that's
right,
what I think
right.
Attorney General James said, closed the door on a bad chapter. And here we have a rising superstar who has great policies that impact individuals' lives.
Right, so
we're going to
focus
on raising the minimum wage, and we're going to focus on the drug, heroin, and fentanyl epidemic in New York. Those are really good things. So I think now we can see something negative and a positive, without
right.
a doubt. I think the Me Too movement, the Time of Up movement, I think those movements definitely played a role in helping to get rid of Governor Cuomo.
Now, I know we don't have much time for you, but then my last couple of questions for you. One of the issues that has been coming up the last couple of days is about Bill Cosby. And could you explain, I know we had you on the show when it first happened, but could you kind of, you know, truncate for us and explain why isn't Bill Cosby in jail at this moment?
Well, you know, Bill Cosby's case is totally different than almost any other case. And a lot of times people say, you know, it's this double jeopardy. It's kind of double jeopardy, but it's not. And this is why I say that. Bill Cosby and every individual has a constitutional right against self-incrimination, means you don't have to say anything against yourself.
Okay.
However, he was not being charged criminally. They filed a civil lawsuit against him
okay.
to do a deposition. And deposition is where you're there and the other side who's suing you ask you questions. Bill Cosby and his attorney were saying, look, we have a constitutional right against self-incrimination, and we're not going to ever sit down and talk to you. So that lawsuit was at a standstill. My understanding is that the attorney of the victim then reached out and said, hey, if the DA's office decides that they're never going to prosecute you and you put this in writing and there's an agreement, then will you talk? If that was the opportunity, he said yes. So he gave up his constitutional right when he made a deal with the district attorney's office. So the district attorney's office makes this deal. Now, fast forward, I think, 10 years later, and that now there's a new district attorney. That district attorney runs on a platform that says, I'm going to prosecute Bill Cosby. And so they do. He says, it doesn't matter that I made a deal. It wasn't me who made the deal. It was someone who was in the office before me. So it doesn't matter. I'm no longer going to abide by that deal. The Supreme Court, the state of Pennsylvania, said, no, you're wrong. If your office makes the deal, it doesn't matter if you're here 20 years earlier or 40 years earlier. Your office must always abide by that deal. And because you made that deal, you cannot use the statement that Bill Cosby made that you used in the prosecution of Bill Cosby. So without that statement, what is the evidence that you really have? And so they pretty much have said, you know, there's no other evidence for us to really go forward on. Therefore, now they've dismissed the case against Bill Cosby.
Now, people feel that perhaps that is helpful in the long run to African Americans or Hispanics in the system. Is that true?
Well, I think one of the things the system does, it doesn't see us for who we are. The system treats us, African Americans and Hispanics, differently. I mean, just today I saw an article in which you had a white female who was a clerk in Cleveland and a black female who was a teacher. Both of them were found, pled guilty to stealing money. The white female pled guilty to stealing $200,000. She had a 21-count indictment. She pled guilty to one count, and the prosecutor's office asked that she go to jail. She paid $100,000 in restitution, had $100,000 left to pay. The judge, who was a white female, basically gave that white female, who was the defendant, gave her a suspended sentence,
didn't send
her to jail.
Right.
Then you have the black female, who's a school teacher, who stole $40,000, who suffered from a gambling addiction, who also suffered some mental health issues, lost her job, reached her pension to fund herself, to get on her feet, to pay her bills. She went through a job training program, had a whole new job, I think paid about $5,000 restitution. Her judge said, you know what, I don't accept what you did. The prosecution office also asked for 6 months to a year in jail, and her judge gave her 18 months in jail.
Right.
So then you look at the criminal justice system and says, what's the difference? One's a black female who goes to prison. Was it why? Well, you can say, from what I can see, it's because you didn't value who she was as a person because you saw a black woman in front of you, and the other was a white female. You didn't want to necessarily send her to jail because you saw yourself as a white female, potentially yourself as a white female judge in her. And so that's why I think a lot of people have a distrust in the criminal justice system, because the criminal justice system sometimes sees the worst in us as minorities instead of seeing us as who we are as individuals.
So which brings up just so many points here and so much more to discuss. I know that we're going to have you back on to take us through and help us to understand the law as it's applied to black and brown folks. And then, of course, looking at sexual assault and sexual harassment in the case of Governor Cuomo. Ivan Bates, thank you so much for joining us from Bates and Garcia Attorneys at Law. Thank you for your time today, sir.
Thank you, and thank you for having me, and take care and have a great day.
You too. So, folks, we're going to hold it here. When we come back, we're going to open up the phone lines. I want to hear from you about the fact that Governor Cuomo of New York, who won an Emmy for his performance during the COVID quarantine shutdown, his back-and-forth banter with his brother, was accused of sexual assault and sexual harassment. The state's attorney general did some investigation, looked at over 74,000 pieces of evidence, and she said, look, I believe the women. Fast forward to today, he is resigning in 14 days. Let's talk about it when we return. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Folks, we're talking here on American History 101 about sexual assault and sexual harassment as we take a deep dive into Governor Cuomo's decision to resign effective in 14 days. I just want to say stay with us for the next hour, because in the second hour of the show, I want to get into this story going out from sexual assault and sexual harassment to talking about the criminal justice system, where a white woman who stole $250,000 got probation, while a black woman who stole $40,000 got 18 months in prison. We're going to talk about that in the second hour. Governor Cuomo who became somewhat of a hero figure during the COVID shutdown. People were impressed by the way he stood up to President Trump, then President Trump, the way he says, I'm a fighter and I became a fighter for you. I'm taking full responsibility for my people. I'm doing what I can. And he, during the time of the COVID shutdown, he gave daily briefings, some of them long. He was making posters. He was bantering with his brother. He had his children. Like, it became the Governor Cuomo plus his brother show. Like, it was something to behold that they eventually won an Emmy for. Well, now he is under investigation for sexual assaulting and sexually harassing 11 women at this point, but people are speculating there might be many more. What he has chosen to do is he has chosen, as he read the tea leaves, to resign. I want to go first to a little piece of the Cuomo press conference today where he gave us a tiptoe through his life rather than just saying, I resign. And then I'm going to have some input from Dr. Sharon Wright Austin, who joined us yesterday, who's just going to chime in on this, and then Trey Lewis, a journalist. Let's take a listen to Governor Cuomo.
The Attorney General did a report on complaints made against me by certain women for my conduct. The report said I sexually harassed 11 women. That was the headline people heard and saw and reacted to. The reaction was outrage. It should have been. However, it was also false. My lawyers, as you just heard from Rita Glavin, have reviewed the report over the past several days and have already raised serious issues and flaws that should concern all New Yorkers. Because when there is a bias or a lack of fairness in the justice system, it is a concern for everyone, not just those immediately affected. The most serious allegations made against me had no credible factual basis in the report. And there is a difference between alleged improper conduct and concluding sexual harassment. Now, don't get me wrong. This is not to say that there are not 11 women who I truly offended. There are. And for that, I deeply, deeply apologize. I thought a hug and putting my arm around a staff person while taking a picture was friendly, but she found it to be too forward. I kissed a woman on the cheek at a wedding, and I thought I was being nice, but she felt that it was too aggressive. I have slipped and called people honey, sweetheart, and darling. I meant it to be endearing, but women found it dated and offensive. I said on national TV to a doctor wearing PPE and giving me a COVID nasal swab, you make that gown look good. I was joking. Obviously, otherwise I wouldn't have said it on national TV, but she found it disrespectful. I take full responsibility for my actions. I have been.
So that was Governor Cuomo doing everything but taking responsibility. What he is doing, he is making excuses. He's trying to twist the truth. And truly, there are at least 11 women who are not just offended, but feel they have been sexually harassed and in some cases assaulted by Governor Cuomo. And he used his bully pulpit to put forth his agenda once again. To talk about this a little bit more in detail, Dr. Sharon Wright Austin, a professor of political science at the University of Florida. She joined us yesterday. And we also have Trey Lewis, a journalist who's based in Texas. Dr. Austin and Trey, how are you?
Just fine.
So, Trey, I want to come to you first. I'd like to hear your thoughts. First, why don't we break it up into two pieces? First, let me have you directly respond to Governor Cuomo's, really, what I call his family reunion gathering, where he took us through a video presentation to show that he had been doing the best job he could do, but that people just didn't get him.
Speaking of family, I would love to see the Cuomo family group chat right about now what they are talking about and how his little brother is going to be able to spin this on his television program on, CNN. You know, the thing is, I mean, this is kind of reminiscent. We've heard this from politicians when I was growing up. It was famously the Monica Lewinsky, quote unquote, scandal. No sexual relations with that woman. It's twofold. I'm gonna be human about it. No one is truthful about their relations with other people, generally speaking.
Right.
Generally speaking, if questioned about it, they are going to lie. Now, that is the innocent side. The not so innocent side is that there's clearly improprieties that was going on, whether they be mild or more heavy. He needs to understand that that's just inappropriate. He's a public figure. He should never cross the line, particularly with women he do not know, he doesn't have relations with, and women who might be involved with other people. Regardless, he doesn't know these people. He doesn't have that type of relation with them. He should know better. I don't want to hear you're from a certain different era or it was allowed. That's exactly what it was. It was allowed. Everyone knew it was wrong. They still just did it. But, you know, so don't get me like, oh, it was a different time period. Yeah, they just allowed it back then. It's not like the old NBA. They just allowed shoveling. It doesn't mean that it was a part of basketball. They just allowed it to happen. So he needs to he did the right thing. He should have did it a year ago, but he did the right thing by resigning. He did the wrong thing about trying to cover it up. Obviously, he didn't go through a PR company to do that because it makes him look even more bad.
It does. Let me come to you, Dr. Austin. I think the part where I got physically ill was when we saw the collage of photos, right? When he's like, no, this is me kissing her. It doesn't look bad. Look, here's me hugging her. I could not believe that this is the way he's choosing to go out by making this stand. Like, it felt wrong.
Yeah, the one thing I want to point out, for people who may not really have been following this closely, this was a 168-page report.
Yes.
And he's trying to make it seem like it's just a case in which I may have done something or said something or these women were offended. These are, I'm sitting here looking at this report right now, and these are extensive comments, not just from these 11 women, but also allegations that he threatened people, he engaged in name-calling, his work environment, the word is used in the report is toxic. The Attorney General, Letitia James, has interviewed 179 people, including the governor himself. And so this is not a case. Really, with the press conference today, he lied, because this has been going on for quite some time. It was an ongoing investigation. He probably had been engaging in this kind of behavior for quite some time. So for someone to come up with a 168-page report with extensive allegations, not only from these women, but also from him not really even denying it. Because if you read the report, and it's easy to find online, you can do a simple search and find it. He says that, I may have touched someone, I may have done this. But the main thing that I'm finding troubling besides all of that is the retaliation, that he made it clear to the people who work for him. If by chance you say anything, he made that clear to the women, but also to the other people who may have witnessed it. If you want to keep your job here, you need to keep your mouth shut. And that was the type of environment that he had. And then also another point I want to make is that I think this is a strategic move on his part, because since he was not impeached, he can run for office again, because there are no term limits in New York in terms of for the governor's positions. And so if he, by chance, he served three terms, if he wants to run again for another term, he could, because there's nothing to prohibit that. And polls have recently shown, even when these allegations surfaced, polls have shown that he still remains pretty popular, and there still are some people who don't believe these women and probably never will. So it could be a case that the press conference was all designed to make it possible for him to run again by not really exactly admitting that you were guilty. That would basically give him a way to run again.
Well, let me ask you, Trey, let's talk about Me Too for a moment, because we know that prior to dealing with COVID-19, the hashtag MeToo movement was larger than life. And it was making its rounds through every aspect of our society, from politics to journalism to television to entertainment to sports to the academy, like every single aspect of our society. And we saw high-profile men who were able to go unchecked for so long finally be held accountable. Some people felt that the pendulum swung too far to the right. where just the cry of saying, I've been sexually assaulted, you end up with a man being fired. But with that in mind, we still have a large portion of our society where they don't believe the women. You shouldn't have gone there. You shouldn't have touched him. You shouldn't have leaned in. You shouldn't have worked for him. You shouldn't, you shouldn't, you shouldn't. So can you talk a little bit about where do we go from here with Governor Cuomo resigning but not admitting, not even apologizing, and trying to help people come to grips with the current state of hashtag Me Too?
Yeah, you know, 2018 was a, you know, watershed moment as far as sexual assault and harassment becoming really serious, right, going forward in all aspects of life, like you said, entertainment, sports, whatever. But there are two things I think socially we have to deconstruct first. And it's twofold because it's women, and unfortunately it is. One is victim shaming, period. You know, when people say, if you, you know, if your car is stolen or if something is taken out of your car, people say, well, did you leave your doors unlocked? Was your windows down? And that might have happened, but that still doesn't allow, or that still doesn't justify someone should have stole your CD player or your, you know, or your headphones or something like that or your car. So there's the victim shaming of that. And then there's, for women, there's our sexual double standard that we have. Like you said, if a woman is dressed a certain way, then she was asking to be groped or harassed or what have you. So we have this standard, or we do this to women where we shame them as far as them, whether they're, you know, expressive or what have you about the sexuality, we have a tendency to tear that down in any good fashion. So as a society, we have to not accept that. We have to not accept the constant, whether it be from journalism, whether it just be social norms, we have to not accept the victim shaming and particularly the sexual double standards that go to women before we even address the seriousness of what was taking place. Because, like I mentioned earlier, for the most part, the reason why people would say, well, why did it take so many women so long to bring forth these allegations or what have you? Because as we spoke earlier, it was for decades it was allowed. I mean, a lot of these things wasn't even law until recently, right? So where we need to go first, I think step by step, is also obviously make it law where certain things go on, which we pretty much have. And then I think the second part of that is the social application of that. We have to get away from the constant urge or need to check women because they look a certain way. And if they look a certain way, then they obviously were wrong, and making it seem as though the man was completely innocent in the situation.
Now, Dr. Austin, so the Me Too movement, and I always say hashtag Me Too, I want people to understand that the Me Too movement actually started, which was started by Tarana Burke. It was started on Twitter, and it was a way to draw attention to women that had been sexually assaulted and sexually harassed, even though it was picked up and carried forward by an actress. It was important that Black women stepped up and said, you know, this does not belong to you. This, I think, of the actress from Charmed, right? It's like, this does not belong to you. Hashtag Me Too is not just, you know, a catchy slogan on Twitter. It's actually the name of a movement, and it's been going on for 10 years. So with the Me Too movement, 201 powerful men, they call them powerful because they were in positions of power, were brought down, with nearly half of them replaced by women. And then it stopped. Like, it seemed like it stopped because it didn't get to the highest office. And it became a joke because people would often say, hey, well, what does it mean? Donald Trump has done it and nothing has happened to him. He got rewarded with the presidency. Is Me Too now kind of floundering for space, given that we've come out of the presidency where he clearly did things, said things, put things out there, videotaped things, and was never held accountable for them when it pertains to women?
Well, I think that just Me Too, I don't think it's the movement is floundering. I think that it's just not getting the type of media publicity that it had gotten in the past. And a lot, as you said, it was founded by Tarana Burke, and she was trying to really empower Black women who had been abused to come forward. And it was about more than just sexual harassment. It was about women, especially who were from poor families, feeling empowered and empowering themselves and having self-respect and having a higher level of self-esteem. So it was a movement that has always been very positive. And then later it became associated with hashtag Me Too, and sexual harassment. And as you mentioned, women like Alyssa Milano and
yes.
other really famous actresses, mostly white women. and some people even said that the white women came in and sort of took control of it because black women usually aren't believed. And then with the Mute R. Kelly, that was different, but it was kind of tied to it as well. I don't think the movement is dying. I just think that... that with this, if anything, it will probably empower more women who have been harassed to come forward after seeing what happened to Governor Cuomo, because this is one of the rare occasions in which a powerful man has had to step down. Because, you know, we talk about Donald Trump, but unfortunately, we also have to remember Bill Clinton back in the 1990s.
Yes.
If it had done the same thing now that he did back then, he would have gotten more than just an impeachment from the House. I mean, you know, who knows what would have happened? He might have been convicted and removed from office. And even there have been some allegations about Joe Biden. There have been allegations about a lot of powerful men. Even, you know, former Vice President Al Gore was even accused of harassing women. So this is about more than just he said, she said. And I think that's something that people need to understand about this situation with Governor Cuomo. It's about the fact that this was documented. And if you look at the report, these women came forward and gave their names. They didn't try to be anonymous, because if a woman is anonymous, then she's less likely to be believed, because people say, well, if she's telling the truth, why doesn't she come forward? But I think that the reason more women don't come forward is because of the way they get treated. I remember Anita Hill in the 1990s
yes.
and other women who come forward, or even their names have been leaked. And then, which was the case with Anita Hill, she didn't come forward. Her name was somehow found out and it was leaked to the press. And, you know, just think about how their lives were upended because of it. And that's why more women won't come forward. So the movement is still going strong, but I think in our society, we do need to listen to people and not just be so quick to dismiss women when they say they've been harassed. That's not to say that women sometimes, maybe they might be lying. We don't know for sure, but we at least need to listen to what they have to say. And I think the reason that more women don't come forward is because you're usually not believed, and usually people just refuse to listen to you.
But there's another side, Trey, that I want to just put out here. There was an article in the New York Times, and it was an interview of at least 8 to 10, in this particular instance, they were all white women, whose sons mm-hmm. had been accused of sexual assault, harassment, or rape while they were in college. And they interviewed these women saying, well, there's another side. What do you do when you believe your son, when evidence then comes out that it didn't happen, but your son's life has been ruined? That every time they type in John Smith, that's what's going to come up. Like, how do we balance that? Because there are some instances, not a lot of them, but there are some instances where men have been accused whose lives have been ruined, and it comes out later that it didn't happen.
Right. I remember, I think you remember the Nate Parker
yes.
situation a couple years ago?
Yes.
Where his movie came out, and for the Nat Turner movie came out, and then, you know, once it came out, of course, unraveling
yep.
of what had happened like 20 years prior. The crazy thing is that you can be accused of, you know, something like double murder and still be a quote unquote somewhat respected person if you're exonerated, like, I don't know, someone like O.J. Simpson.
Right.
But if you have been charged at any point in time with any type of impropriety with women, you could be labeled that lifelong, even if you completely come clean with it. We saw this in recent hirings with the NBA,
yeah.
where the likes of like Jason Kidd. Something that took place, you know, 20 years ago with his wife, or fiance at the time, I think, it came up, and his coaching hiring, could he be a suitable coach because this happened 20 years ago? I think the proper thing is that we have to treat it as we at some point, we have to treat these things like we treat everything else as far as crimes is concerned. Like the doctor was saying previously, we can't automatically, unassume the woman, but we can't all automatically see that there's innocence as well. So we have to go through this with a proper vetting situation. And if a person is exonerated, then that person should not have that label attachment going forward, just like with anything, right?
Right.
If a person has served their time, they should get their voting rights back. We have to be a country of, or a people of some type of letting things go. Now, of course, there's multiple incidents or something like that. That's something different. But if a person has been accused of one thing, regardless of it is, and they are been exonerated of it, we have to let them go and have to accept that.
But Dr. Austin, isn't there a thing called, unfortunately, the court of public opinion? because right. of Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and just, you know, the World Wide Web, if you have hundreds, even dozens of articles being written, even if the person exonerated, it is hard to go and clean that out just for a normal individual. The amount of money it would take to hire a company to clean out all of the press about you is something you're not going to be able to do. You just have to deal with it, unfortunately, for the rest of your
right.
life.
Right. Unfortunately. But that's why, as I said, that people need to be listened to. When a woman comes forward and says that she's been harassed, I don't know if we should automatically just think that she's telling the truth, but we at least need to hear what she has to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what the problem is that we just are so quick to try to dismiss women who say that they've been abused, especially if they've been abused by rich, powerful men. And usually it's a case sort of like what we're seeing here, in which these are men who do this for a period of several
yes.
years. And finally,
publicly.
A woman comes forward or several women come forward, and then other women who, that they've harassed in the past feel comfortable coming forward, sort of like a Bill Cosby situation. And that's when the person finally, in some cases, is punished. And so usually that's kind of what happens. These people never learn from their mistakes. Like even yesterday we were just talking about R. Kelly. You know, this had been going on for several decades with him and these underage girls. And he just wouldn't stop. I don't know, maybe he just has some kind of sickness. But that typically is what happens, in which you have a woman who comes forward. Nobody believes her. She usually is humiliated. And then other women start coming forward, and then this is a harasser who has harassed several women. So that typically is the case. But unfortunately, there have been situations like in which women have not been telling the truth. And each time a woman lies, that makes it just that much harder for a woman who is telling the truth to come forward.
Now, I will say, just, you know, Dr. Austin and Trey, before I go to the callers, I'm getting text messages. People are like, you know, how dare you say you don't believe the women? I am not saying that I don't believe the women. In fact, I do. I do stand with the women and, of course, with boys and men when it happens to them as well. I'm also, Trey, the mother of two sons mm-hmm. who are in college.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to think about both of these things and hold them both at the same time, as well as telling my sons, hey, look. You need to be careful. You need to be clear that no means no. You need to be thinking about leveling up. Like, you need to be thinking about ongoing enthusiastic consent every step of the way. Because if you are accused and you're innocent, this is something that we're going to be fighting and you're going to be fighting for years to come.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't think you can completely safeguard yourself from any allegation, but I do believe that for certain things, there's a lot of things you could put in place to avoid any type of misunderstanding. So I think when you're talking about social connections with people, relationship with people, having sexual relationship with people, whatever, I think that it is incumbent on both parties, of course, that there's a lot of steps that can be taken to do the right thing. You just have to not let whatever it is driving you to maybe go the wrong way, whether it be, you know, some type of substance or just, you know, a state of mind or what have you. But I just think that there is, particularly speaking as a man, like I said, you can't safe your guard yourself from every allegation, including things of this nature. But I do believe there's a lot of steps that are in place that you can ensure that what you're getting yourself involved with is consensual and good. And I'm just a believer that there's a reason why, let's say, someone is being accused versus someone else isn't being accused.
Yeah.
So, I'm a true believer. As a man, I'm a true believer in it. I just believe that, you know, you can't safeguard everything, but there's a reason why certain people have, you know, there's no allegations against them, and then there's certain people who have multiple ones against them.
Right.
You know, it kind of adds up, you know?
All right, let me get a caller in here before I go to Dr. Austin. Donna from Baltimore wants to join the conversation. Donna, how are you?
Pretty good. How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Well, when, you know, if he's been governor for 2 years, Governor Cuomo, and all offices have a civil rights office of civil rights, and I cannot, you know, it starts in-house. And I cannot understand why it took two governorships for it to get to this up to this point. Because when you work for government, the signals were coming out big and loud, and it took this long. And let me give you an example. When I worked for state government, and I was, hashtag me too, and I approached my supervisors and the civil rights office of civil rights. They were run by women. My supervisor was a woman, and the civil rights office was a woman. And I was told by my supervisor, who was white, that I could, they were joking, forget about it, you know, just go on and continue to do your work. He's just making fun. The civil rights officer, which was black, said, if you want to keep your job, you need to just keep your mouth shut and let it continue. Now,
let the abuse continue?
Yes.
Okay, you know what, Don, let me have you hold on for 1 second. I just want to make one correction, and we'll come to you after the break. Let's be clear, folks.
Not the abuse, but the discriminatory practices,
right.
That,
okay.
You know, the...
Well, hold on 1 second, because we have to go to break. So we'll come back to Donna, but let's be clear. Governor Cuomo was elected to his first term in 2011. He has not just been governor for 2 years. He's in his third term. So he was someone who's going to be there at least until, I think, 2023 is when this term was going to end. Let me thank Dr. Sharon Wright Austin and Trey Lewis. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Always
thank
a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Appreciate having you. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, folks, the phone lines will be open. We have Donna holding, we have Charles holding, and we have a line for you so we can talk this through together. Stay with us.